because I have many other priorities that I also want to meet. But, you know, that to have also that self-awareness and confidence that when maybe things aren't going the way you thought they might do, to plan, that that's okay too. And that's been quite a life lesson for me, Deb, actually, to slow down in order to eventually speed up, if that makes sense.
Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Life After Corporate, my friend. And if you are new to our show, welcome home. This is the place where you get solid advice for what it takes to reinvent your life after corporate. And most of the time, we're talking about people who are making the leap from corporate into starting a coaching or a consulting business. And today, we're going to take a different twist. May also lead to coaching and consulting as a second career purpose. We're meeting with Rebecca Hill, who's the founder and principal of Wise Sherpa. She is an expert coach. She's a thinking partner and facilitator for her clients. And she has a background in global professional services and has experience directing people and organizations for Ernst & Young. But her passion and focus now is working with individuals as well as organizations and supporting them as they transition out of organizational life into fulfilling encore careers. And we met through a mutual friend, and it was an instant connection. Tell us a little bit about, are you working with women as well as men?
Yes, I work a lot with women, and I work particularly with women who are in what I call mid to later life, who have had long-term careers in large organizations and are ready to transition out. Or maybe they are not ready to transition out, but they are curious about transitioning out of large organizational life. But I also work with men as well.
Wonderful. Well, welcome to Life After Corporate. And how apropos, because you're all about life after corporate as well and how to make a fruitful transition. So before we dive into what you do and the people that you work with and what that journey looks like, I'd love to hear about your transition from corporate. What were you doing before you left corporate? I know you were in organizational change at EY, but what led you to this career?
Well, it's first of all, Deb, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. As you can probably hear, I'm based in the UK. I'm a Brit by background, although I've lived all over the place. I spent 25 years predominantly working in financial services in the City of London. And latterly, as you said, I worked for EY. I was a global director there. I led large change programs within the organization predominantly. But I also headed up their Women's Economic Empowerment Program, which was a fantastic program called Women Fast Forward. I was incredibly busy. I am married. I have one daughter. And about 5 years ago, I decided to take the leap out of corporate life because I had really enjoyed it, but I was very, very burnt out from my perspective. I had given my career my all, I think, within the organizational context. And I just knew the time was right for something else. And so I stepped out and I took some time out to focus particularly on being a more present parent, if that's fair to say. And in that time, I decided that what I really wanted to do was create Wise Sherpa to work with individuals who, a bit like me, were making that journey out of large organizational life into their fulfilling encore. I have to say that I had already been doing quite a bit of work in this space whilst at EY, working with senior leaders on a number of programs that we had while we were at EY, helping senior partners, experienced professionals to transition out of organizational life. And as you said, I'm a coach and I had also been coaching quite a while as well. So I sort of took that core skill set, if you like, and then built the business around what I'm passionate about. Yeah.
Yeah. So much richness in what you said, and so much I identify with: the burnout, the tiring of outsourcing motherhood and not being present for, in my case, my son, as much as I would have liked to have been. But I also think that, you know, for some reason, women, we're so used to rolling up our sleeves and saying, I'll do it, I'll take care of it. And that's kind of a default response for women in corporate. And I do believe that we shoulder heavier burdens than sometimes our male counterparts do in doing more, because we see what needs to be done. We're so willing to get our hands dirty and take on the extracurricular assignments as well, because we're passionate about helping other women along. Yeah. And burnout is real. Burnout is
Yes, real. Very real.
But yeah. On the other side of that is it's so easy to get burnt out. So you exited corporate. How did you decide? What was the process of picking your encore career? Did you immediately know, oh, this is what I want to do, this is my passion, I want to pursue it? What was that like?
Yes, a really good question, Deb. For me, it was an iterative process, if I'm honest. I knew that I wanted to work with a group of individuals who would inspire me, if that's not too bold, who would challenge me. I'd always liked working with professionals. I've spent the majority of my career working with professionals. And so it took me a while to unpack, and I worked as a coach as well, to help me sort of figure out how I was going to take my core skills and consolidate my experience to be able to build a business. I was fortunate in that I had had some experience of helping my husband build his business alongside when I was still in my corporate career. So I had an inkling of what it was like to create a business, build a business, but it took me quite a while to figure out what the essence of Wise Sherpa was going to be.
So all good coaches have coaches.
They do. They do. And I still, to this day, you know, there are two things that I have: a coach. And as a coach, I have a coaching supervisor, but I also have what I call my personal board of directors. I call them the board you cannot afford. Those are the wise people around me who stretch my thinking and challenge my thinking. And one of those actually is Mark Nister, who I wrote the book with, so who I co-authored the book with. So he was at EY with me, and we had a series of conversations prior to me leaving, then post me leaving, and then the book came out of those conversations. So yes, very much coach was part of it. My board that you cannot afford was part of it. And yeah, it was a very iterative and reflective process. Yeah.
And the book we're talking about is From Work Life to New Life with Mike Nister and Rebecca Hill. I have it holding it up if you're watching.
Yeah.
So this was fascinating, Rebecca. So you were burnt out. You had a coach, had someone who could guide you and show you that, you know, the compilation of your entire life's experience was something that you could turn into a business and monetize. Your husband had been an entrepreneur, so he was an inspiration. Then you had your board of directors. So how long ago was that? And what do you think about your journey where you are right now?
So the journey started really just over 4 years ago, I'd say. Yeah. And it was, as I say, it was quite reflective, quite iterative. So really it took me, I think, a good 18 months to refine. I was still doing consulting work, by the way, alongside people reaching out to me, asking me to do different things. And I also had some of my coaching clients, quite frankly, who I've been working with for a number of years. So I don't want to say that the business was built in complete isolation of any other activity, because there was a lot going on alongside it. And then, of course, there's busy home life as well, because that was part of the reason for leaving organizational life, was to be that more present parent, if you like, and partner as well, quite frankly, to my husband. And so from my perspective, yeah, the first sort of 18 months took time. It was quite iterative. But then about 2.5 years ago, just around when the pandemic hit, can you believe it? I was ready to go. I was ready to press the button and really ramp the business up. And I, all over again, I found myself in a sort of changing environment, you know, homeschooling young child, having to pivot my husband's business because he's in events. But throughout that, I was fortunate to have that process of writing the book with Mike as well. So that kept me very focused on what I want Wise Sherpa to be, what I want the business to be, to have good grace and accept at times that it might not be going at the speed that I would like it to go at, but that was okay too. Because I think particularly for those of us who've been in corporate life, we're used to running at like 100 miles an hour. Yeah. You know, insane work, working weeks, hours, you know, requests, you know, just used to juggling so much. It can be quite daunting when you step out of that and you decide that what you want to do is build your own business. And in my case, that is going to be what I call a lifestyle business. It's not going to be a big scaling business at this point in time for the reasons that I've just articulated, because I have many other priorities that I also want to meet. But, you know, that to have also that self-awareness and confidence that when maybe things aren't going the way you thought they might do, to plan, that that's okay too. And that's been quite a life lesson for me, Deb, actually, to slow down in order to eventually speed up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I have a motto, go slow to go fast, you know, slow down to go fast, because it's deliberate, right? So we're creating a deliberate experience, a deliberate next job and next career. And you can end up being your worst boss ever.
Yeah.
You know, because you might be self-critical. You might think, oh, I have to be busy all of the time. I have to work 12 hours a day. I'm actually building a business. But what you mentioned is very common for my clients as well, especially those, because all my clients are ex-corporate or ex-education or healthcare. And they are used to having high demanding jobs. They're used to a ton of responsibility. And you can't just flip a switch and go from corporate to coaching or even consulting without having something that's keeping the money flowing in. You know, unless you left corporate with a large cushion and you have a long ramp up that you can luxuriously take. And I think anyone should take a luxurious journey when they're launching their business. You have to be really clear on, you know, where am I going? Who am I serving? What am I offering? How am I pricing that? And how are people discovering me pretty quickly? And actually, truthfully, I think your journey was pretty quick. Maybe it was because of the pandemic and having that opportunity and maybe even the necessity because your husband's business has slowed down because there were no in-person events. You know, sometimes it's the pressure of, well, gee, I need to put food on the table. We need to keep paying the mortgage, that lights a fire that helps with resistance or procrastination or indecision.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's you're spot on there, Deb. I mean, the challenge is for individuals like us who are coming out of large organizational life, as you say, is to not swap what was before for now. It's to be very, very mindful, very conscious. But that's often the fallback behavior, isn't it? It's the default that we slip into.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the work that you do.
Yeah.
Because we're in this era where people are leaving corporate. They are healthy, they're vibrant, their minds are still very active. And, you know, we might be in our 60s, but there's a long road ahead. And many of the women I work with want to give back in some way. They want to take their decades of experience and put it to use helping others. So how do you help people who are going through this transition? I know you work with organizations as well as individuals. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So what I observed in my organizational life, and I'm talking here specifically about sort of the professions and professional services, but it does also translate into certain parts of the public sector as well, as we were talking to about earlier on, and other areas. What we're seeing is there's a generational divide. And also, I think a difference in gender behavior. We're seeing that generally experienced professionals are starting to ask themselves some pretty profound questions around what comes next, anywhere from their sort of mid-40s onwards. And that's because they're transitioning into that, whatever we want to call it, third stage of life. You know, there are many different phrases to it. And Historically, I would say that that was later. Yeah, that happened maybe mid-50s, 60s. And particularly with men, I think that is still the case. I think what we're seeing is women are asking those hard questions earlier. And there may be very good reasons for that. Some of that actually may also be physiological because of the changes that happen around that sort of age group for women as well. So if we think of it in that context, there's this sort of shifting patterns happening now where there are many more professionals who want to think about what am I going to do next rather than that classic retirement model. We think about healthy longevity being predicated on having purpose, and purpose is for women, you know, not just looking after maybe the grandchildren if they have them, or providing elder care or whatever it is. It's something, or walking the dog or whatever it may be. It needs to be something. And it doesn't have to be the purpose of a massive P. It can be purpose of a small P. But you need to have different things in your life that are going to stimulate you and get you out of bed in the morning. So the work that I'm doing is really helping individuals who are in organizational life is starting to think about that, where the transition looks really scary, because for a lot of them, they might have only ever worked in one organization. That's not uncommon even now in professional services, is to say, okay, so you know what you don't want anymore. That's very easy, actually, to know what you don't want. The hard bit is actually figuring out what you do want and doing that work with them to help them then create that runway, as you alluded to, because very few people can afford to go what I call cold turkey and just leave, and then help them figure out what that purposeful encore is going to be. And that's what book's about as well, essentially.
Yeah. So why do you think this shift from corporate to wanting to do something else, wanting to live a life of purpose, is moving down in the generations? You know, why are younger and younger people? I know during the pandemic, you know, with homeschooling and flexible work and now hybrid work environments, I think for some, it was a wake-up call to say, oh, you know, there's a piece of my life that I haven't even been paying attention to. I've been so focused on work. Do you think that was part of it, or what else is going on?
Well, I think there's a few things that are happening here. I mean, one is we've got an aging population. So in the UK by 2023, according to the Office for National Statistics, you know, 50% of our workforce is going to be aged 50 plus. But the workplace isn't really working for them anymore. You know, that they themselves want something different. Then you've got the trend that's come through with digital technology, where all of a sudden before you really had to go to a place to go and do your work. Well, as you say, the pandemic has proved that we don't have to do that anymore, right? Technology is there for many, particularly professionals, to do their work any place, anytime, really. So I think those are really important factors in actually driving the trend. I think there's one other thing that I would say, which is the generational piece, which is Generation X, which is my generation, had their, you know, as professionals, tended to have their children much later. The children are now, you know, if you think about it, they're sort of at the point of, you know, maybe teens leaving home, etc. And those children are asking their parents some pretty profound questions about, you know, well, what was your contribution? What did you do? Yeah. And so of that sort of Generation X and younger, because they're seeing the younger generations doing things really differently, different values. Yeah. Just different approaches to life in general. So that
say more about those values and different approaches to life.
Well, I think it's fair to say that Gen Y, they won't be homeowners necessarily like their parents were. And if they are, they will be homeowners far, far later. So in that sort of mindset of, you know, certainly when Generation X went through education, then went into the first job, then you bought a home, you know, there was a very clear path there, wasn't there? And that path was trod by the generations that went before us. The boomers, and before that, the traditionalists. So what we're seeing is Gen Y actually saying, well, hang on, my life's going to be very, very different. So I'm going to make some very different choices right here, right now. So that's one element. But there's also, you know, quite frankly, what's going on in the broader kind of environment around climate change, etc. There are a lot of young people who are saying, actually, I don't want to do that kind of, I don't want to work that way. I don't want to do that kind of work. I want to do work that really matters.
Yes.
And I think that, so there's a number of things playing out there. And I certainly see that with not just Generation Y, but Generation Z and younger. Yeah. They're asking.
And the rest are mobile. I'm seeing a lot of digital nomads, whether they're employed in corporate or not. I had a conversation yesterday with a woman. I don't know exactly her age. I think she's probably in her early 40s, who's employed by a law firm, but she moves around. You know, I'm in Costa Rica. I am in Washington. Right now I'm in Big Sur, California. Yeah. And I think there's this sense of, I don't need to be anchored in one place. And even my son, who's just 23, I guess that makes him Gen Z,
yeah,
has a job. You know, I went to college, graduated, got a job in a corporation. He said, you know, I'll probably give it a couple of years, but this isn't what I want my life to be. I don't see myself working in a corporation. So given that all of this is going on, right, in the minds of the generations coming after us, how are organizations supposed to be supporting people generationally when there's different values, different motivating factors? What is this doing to organizations?
Oh, that is a really complex question, Deb. I think a lot of organizations are in denial, you know, and I don't know if there's a comparable phrase, you know, like there is for the environmental factors like greenwashing. I think a lot of them are doing, putting some nice stuff in like reverse mentoring programs, those sorts of things, trying to open up intergenerational dialogue. But realistically, you're spot on. The younger generations don't see work as a place they need to go necessarily. It's the thing they do, and they might do it for a while and then they might move on. So trying to create an environment in an organization that works for all four or five generations that are present is very, very difficult. And I think that's why also we are seeing experienced professionals saying, actually, this, it's not working for me any longer. My face doesn't fit. Yeah. And I don't know if that resonates with you, but a lot of my clients say, it's changed too much.
And, you know, in the older generation, you know, talking about boomers, some feel that they age out, especially women. You know, once I'm over 50, my opportunities to switch careers greatly diminish. My opportunities to excel in the corporation that I'm in greatly diminish. And so now we are in this amazing time that I'm really excited about, actually, because it's a time of choice.
Yeah.
You know, and I say my why is that I am all about giving women a choice of how they earn a six-figure salary. You can, if you love the corporate world and you're jazzed by that, you're motivated, you love that environment, that energizes you, then go for it. But if you're like Rebecca and I, and you're feeling burnt out, the work that you're doing is no longer in alignment with your values, your family values, or your values around your own mental health. You know, we're bringing mental health to the fore now with high performers,
yep,
with athletes talking about it. And I think those conversations need to be happening in the corporate space as well. So the corporate landscape is going to change. How we work is going to change. And the fact that now we have more choice now more than ever. This brings me to the question of, when clients come to you with all this choice, right? What do I do with all this choice? How do I pick my next direction? How do you guide them? You know, you mentioned everyone knows what they don't want, but no one knows what they do want. So how do you discover your purpose? How do you discover what it is that you do want?
Yeah, well, from my perspective, often my clients come to me when there are a series of transitions happening in their life. And usually work is, if you like, not the straw that breaks the camel's back, but it's the one bit that they, on top of everything else, so there might be the personal, the psychological, and then the physical, there may be lots going on. And then on top of it, there's a professional. So what I tend to do is help them understand, we unpick what's going on in their lives, because I think it can be very easy just to jump to, oh, well, maybe you could look at this, maybe you could look at that, da, 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 without actually acknowledging where they are at right now, where they find themselves. And then we do the classic, you know, looking at the values and the experience, what gives them energy. By the time women get to this stage of their life, they can do a lot of stuff and they can do that stuff really, really well. You know, they can move mountains, but just because they can do it doesn't mean that they should be doing it, because right. It can often leave them completely drained. So we look a lot about what gives you energy, what excites you, the different elements. What are the building blocks of what you would like your life to be like? Yeah. So then again, back to that piece around the professional, personal, the relationships, all of that. So sort of building it out so that bit by bit, they build up a picture of what they're moving towards. And that becomes very energizing and exciting. And what the runway is that they might need to put in place to get from where they are to where they want to be. And recognizing that this is a multi-year journey, right? This is, it's not a quick jump, as I'm sure you find with your clients as well.
And, you know, truthfully, to just bring color to your point, when I left corporate, I was burnt out. I was getting a divorce and I hit menopause. And I was in a sandwich between my mother's dementia and my son turning 13, which is a very tender age for kids, where you want to be there, you want to be watching, you want to be present. But what I find with women, and I gave myself a long runway. I mean, I gave myself about a year and a half to really ramp up. And even then, you know, I think it took 3 years to get even close to my corporate salary. Because I was fairly senior in the organization. So the mistake that most people make is they underestimate what it's going to take to make this change and make this shift financially, psychologically, how long it takes. You know, I call entrepreneurship the long and winding road, just like you pivoted. You know, everybody pivots. Mm. My first program was I was a certified health coach. It wasn't until I got into a mastermind that I started looking around the room and saying, oh my God, these women don't really have a business. They have an idea, but they don't have a business. This is no business model. Nobody's making any money. That I decided to combine. I wish I knew you then, Rebecca, because, you know, sometimes you have the temptation to like throw the baby out with the bathwater, as they say.
Absolutely. You know,
leave corporate behind, jump in, do something completely different. I'm starting my life over again. But that wealth of experience is part of who you are.
And those relationships and networks that you've got well. You know, this is the thing about women that never ceases to amaze me is, you know, how they downplay, you know, their experience, the connections, the networks, and getting them to a space where they feel comfortable about that, owning it, and then going out and reaching out and making those, you know, reconnecting, et cetera. It seems to be much harder, I think, for women than men. My male clients don't have the same challenges for the most part when it comes to, you know, making connections and, you know.
And those connections are your first clients. I remember my very first retreat. I had two colleagues that I worked with in my corporate job. And I still continue to this day. I have a former colleague in my Launch Lab program right now. It's almost like every cohort, there's at least someone who is from my past career. And it's because you're not the only one. You're not the only one thinking about leaving corporate and creating something new.
No.
So Rebecca, this has been such a rich conversation. Is there anything else that you want to add that as a piece of advice for those who are listening? Because I know there are those who listen to the podcast who are still in corporate, who are thinking about making that leap, aren't sure. There's a little bit of fear, confusion, indecision. Can I make it? What would you say to them?
I would say to them, plan. Have a plan. You know that a plan is a direction of travel. It is not, you know, it will shift and it will change. If you're scared and you don't know where to, you know, how to take the first step, then, you know, I would say this, have a look at the book, because the book does give you some good insights on, it's got some lovely case studies, actually. It's got seven different case studies on seven different paths that we've identified that people can take, you know, everything from, you know, building a portfolio board career through to retraining, you know, so start with some inspiration, start with conversation, have a plan, appreciate that it might take time to build out that plan. But it's really about creating a direction of travel and not getting too fixated on, you know, it has to be like that. Because as we know, where we think we're heading is rarely where we end up.
Yeah, that's
but that doesn't mean where we end up isn't amazing. So
that's true. I mean, part of it is the joy is in the journey, right? So the book is From Work Life to New Life, Rebecca Hill and Mike Mister. Rebecca, if people are listening, how do they get a copy of the book? Is there a website?
Well, there is a website. It's called fromworklifetonewlife.com. So you can order it off there, and it's available on Amazon as well as other good booksellers.
So, Rebecca, thank you so much for this conversation today. It was rich. I know that there are many people out there questioning their next. And there is a path. You need a plan and you need a roadmap, knowing that you may shift direction somewhere down the road. So with that, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us here today on Life After Corporate. My friends, there's more goodness coming. Please, if you enjoyed this episode, if you love this podcast, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Write down your thoughts in a review. I love to hear from our listeners. And of course, feel free to reach out to me on social media. Let me know what you'd like to hear about in future episodes. With that, that's it for now, my friend. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love. Yeah.